ました。エリシャギャンツ。
Hi, I'm Neil, and welcome to the Crosscast. In today's show, we are going to review Cyclocross Fashion Week, the week in which we see who'll be wearing which colours next season. Of course, we are talking about the national champs, where some jerseys were retained, some were, well, returned, weren't they? And so there were quite a few brand new wearers of national jerseys for this coming year. One thing is for sure, though, pretty much every national champ in Europe ended up being a muddy slog. And, well, I heard someone say at the weekend, actually, wetsuits might have been more suitable than skin suits for most of the championships right across the whole of the continent. In today's last ronde, we are going to look forward to the final races in the lead-up to the 2023 World Champs. Now, the national championships, it actually marked the end of my race season for 22-23. But, Matt, you still got a few more races, well, not to be on the bike, but on the mic.
Yeah, on the mic and not on the bike. Have indeed. I mean, it's been cracking, actually, to commentate on different races. And as probably most people know, do a lot of work with the UCI, with the international governing body now, from indoor cycling to urban and flatland BMX and you name it, pretty much. I tend to get all of the really interesting ones. And again, cyclocross right the way through to the World Championships now on their worldwide feed. So that's aimed at people basically who don't have their own show. So, for example, if you're in Belgium, you're going to get your own coverage. With Sporza, with their own Belgian-speaking commentators. But there is the basically ambient feed goes out, which got nothing on it, and that's what's used, let's say, by GCN in the UK, or Discovery as it is now. And that then pushes out their own commentary over the top. But for the rest of the world, they get me. And it does mean, of course, that I've got a lot of homework to do. It does come in handy for the crosscast, oddly enough. And I've been saving a lot of time not duplicating stuff, but it's been really nice, actually, to be able to get the inside track on some of the courses and some of the insights from behind the scenes as well, which is really nice, really good to get that depth. It does add a lot more colour. But I must admit, last weekend, I had no cyclocross races whatsoever. And that weekend was the first national championships I haven't been for. I can't remember how long. I haven't worked it out because I'd actually be quite sad about that. But I reckon it's well over a decade since I've missed one at all in any way, shape or form. I've been working on for way too long. So it was quite interesting to watch it. But I thought overall, we're coming into it seems very odd. We've got seasons ending now for people. And then we've got another month of season, effectively, for international riders and anybody who's going to go race on the continent. So if you're wanting to pick up extra points and so on, it's really interesting because it's not just the World Cups. There's a lot more racing. So Neil, but you ended your season at the Fell Race Stroke cyclocross race that was the champs, and that's probably more to do with what we saw rather than how it was. How's your season been? I mean, it's been a long season because you kicked off right at the very start, didn't you? You were there in September racing and raced pretty much all the way through. How's your season gone?
Yeah, you're right. I started in September. I only did one local race from my local league this year. I would have loved to have done more, but with work and national trophies and everything else, I couldn't get to any more than that. So I was a bit disappointed about that. I think the previous year I had a really, really good season, and a lot of it was because of things that were totally out of my control. I just got lucky with not getting any sickness for like a whole year, which was, yeah. And whereas this year has been, you know, there's been a few bits and pieces, and the training hasn't gone perfectly. So probably, and I know that my power's down and all of those types of things. So for this year, I have to be really satisfied with how it all finished up. You know, I raced everything I wanted to race. I finished everything I wanted to finish. I felt I was riding pretty well, even though the power wasn't quite there. So yeah, I've enjoyed my season as a whole. I'm already looking forward to next year. I have this every year. I kind of start my
How it should be.
Yeah, but you know, I start my off season, and then literally, I usually reckon it's 48 hours that I can cope with it, and then I'm like already thinking ahead. But yeah,
well, that can't be helped though. You've got the national. You know, you've got national champs, and then you finish the season like domestic riders do. And then you've got the world championships and the legendary crush, of course, at the Mansfield household, which is where we have that sort of absolutely the mad party where you're there hosting people, basically not betting, but predicting, let's say, on the world championships, as well as meeting up with like the cyclocross family. That's got to almost rub it in a bit and fire that enthusiasm for the next season.
Yeah, absolutely. It does. This year, yeah, we've been on the crosscast for many years. We've had this ongoing, I wouldn't go as far as campaign, but it could have been, of trying to get more points in the National Trophy Series.
Campaign is a good word.
Yeah, you know, we haven't exactly done a signatory thing, but it's been...
We've not been subtle.
We've not been subtle. And this year it was brought in. You know, so everyone get, you know, down to the 100 riders in a race, it means that as you go to the end of the season, you can see who you were fighting with all season. And you know what? That really worked for me and for a lot of people around me in the National Trophy. So, you know, I finished 20th overall in the National Trophy this year. And you know, I'm really pleased with that. I was hoping to finish in the top 20, and bearing in mind that my power didn't peak like I was hoping it would, because I got not badly ill, but just a bit snuffly and needed a few days off in November. Yeah, and so I'm really happy with it, finishing in the top 20. But you know, it's the people around me. No, I think, you know, I've made friends with a lot of those people who have been around there, and we wouldn't really have known each other, I think, if it hadn't been for the longer points, you know, down to that top 100. And yeah, we hear it time and again about numbers being down and a little bit year on year. And you know, what's the thing I saw the other day? Peak Zwift, you know, the peak numbers in Zwift this year is expected to be down about 10% than it was a year ago. You know, so it's just kind of the waxing and waning of entry and participation, and anything that can be done to encourage participation by making it a more interesting event for people to be there. And I think it's really, really worked. So I'm delighted that the points have been going all the way down to 100. I mean, you know, they might take a few days for them all to get updated, but it's a big job now, and that's a good thing. Thank you. It's a big job now, and yeah, good.
And that was always the argument that I came up against. I mean, I've said it for probably a decade. And against with the powers that be and the people coordinating the series, which has changed through three different people who have been coordinating the series for BC now, that in my history being there. And I must admit, I've probably argued consistently with every single one of them for a long time that this is the way forward to bring more relevance to everybody who's not in the elite. Otherwise, you are marginalizing everybody who isn't in the top 10. It's that simple in my head. And yes, there's a whole lot more work, but I think the rewards would be worth it. Now, hearing that you're saying, yeah, I'm talking to all those people, it makes all that falling out with people and arguing people to try and get this through worthwhile. So, no, great to hear. Long may it continue, and I hope it doesn't get cut in some austerity stroke, minimalizing, rationalizing British cycling cut. Because there is limited time, there's limited resources for everybody. There always is in everything. But that is something that I would hate to see cut down just because it takes more time for somebody to administer. That would be really bad news.
One example here, you know, I've got to know one of the guys from Horsham Cycling, Tim Peters. You know, he's been listening to the show for a while, and it's been great. You know, we've been racing together, and he's really peaked. You know, peaked to a level which is kind of racing me. And I'm on the cusp of getting points from the previous way of doing it, but we wouldn't have had any indication of that that it would be like suddenly there's a random person that appears and they get a point and I got two, you know, on the last round. And that's the beauty of having this whole season-long narrative.
But that is a league. That is a series, because otherwise all you've got is individual events. And when we've got the difference in a national trophy event is to a league event is so minimal than it was previously. Previously, I mean, they were like going to the World Championships compared to going to a trophy. Now, trophies are so similar in so many things. Amazing courses. So many leagues got great courses. They've got great commissaire teams. They've got great results on chip timing, loads of competition, lots of people in your race category. You're going to get the results come out and the leagues are going to be up there. All those things are happening on local league level all the way across the country, which is amazing. It's brilliant. But it has meant that the difference, why go to a trophy if you are not picking up elite points and are chasing a career in cycling? Why would you spend £3,500? I think somebody told me at Clanfield, to do it. Well, you do it because you're racing against, you know, Tim. And Tim has been racing against you. And you know that if you don't go to that last round, he might beat you. So do you know what? That really generates. And I love the fact that then it gives people that extra incentive to go right. And you know, there's always the league option if you can't afford to go up and down the country.
Yeah, and for those people that are committed to the local leagues, brilliant too. You know, we see people that haven't raced any of the national trophies this year. You know, people that I've raced in my local league year on year who would normally do the trophy, and this year they've decided to commit to the local league. You know, and the flip side of that is that you get a lot more national ranking points in your local league than in the national trophy. If you're like at my ability, you know, I'll get, you know, 10 points ish. I'd normally expect a local league race, whereas at a national trophy on a, you know, it'll be two, you know, for their ranking points
and that's race. A whole different points argument.
Let's just not go there. You know,
that's like talking about difficulty levels on turbo trainers on Twitter.
What it means is that then at the national champs, you know, which is based on your gridding. Yep. Back to gridding. Another thing not to talk about is, you know, so I was gridded 73 at the national champs.
Whoa.
After finishing 20th in the national trophy, I'm happy with that. You know, I'm not there to win it.
What position did you finish at the champs, Neil?
35th. So in the kind of the 10-year category, and narrow it down to the half, and it all gets a bit complicated.
But that's the equivalent of the trophy.
And
the equivalent of your local league.
And, you know, 72 to 35th in the national champs, I was really, really happy with that. You know,
that's a lot of fun overtaking people.
I know, exactly. Yeah, you know, and you know, and on a course, on the course as it was, which, you know, it was a tough course, really tough course, for lots of different reasons. I was surprised actually in some ways just to how well I did there, because, like I said at the beginning, I've not been in the best physical condition this year. Not been bad, but not been as good as I was the previous year. And hopefully, if everything went well next year, I'll be slightly quicker. But it doesn't matter, because then you're just racing different people with the same thing.
Yeah, again, I think that's great. I mean, the course, I went out riding with a regular riding partner, somebody I used to race against years ago, on Friday. And I did sort of 3.5 hours. And we rocketed out in one direction, oddly enough, and crawled back in. Let's put it this way. I was glad that I had my computer set in kilometres, because it stayed in double digits everywhere. Because had I had it set in mile per hour, I would have been crawling back in single digits. It was horrendous. I mean, like overnight, it had been like 50, 60 mile an hour winds. We were out in 40 plus mile an hour winds, which is a bit stupid anyway, I've got to admit. But, you know, we've got a fair bit of mass, so I'm not going to get blown over. And coming back in, I must admit, I was riding back in thinking about the back hub and the rear tire of the wheel I was following, and about Dave and his team on site and what they were going to be up against.
Yeah.
With the conditions, just in putting out tape and structures and anything in that, branding in that wind and the course and the pouring incessant rain. And then I saw pictures of the course and Larry Hitmore, I mean, the man is an absolute hero, you know, getting up there, parking up. I mean, you know, he's at every race on the, not just cross scene, but on the road scene as well.
Yeah.
And the images coming back from Larry were just like, okay, this is going to be a really tough one. This is going to be brutal. And then, you know, the pictures on Saturday, I mean, I'm really lucky because I've been involved for a long time. I've got so many friends in the sport. It, looking at people's pictures, it kind of had that blitz sort of feel about it. You know, that sort of, you know, we survived it kind of, we're all in this together kind of moment, rather than almost elite sport and being, you know, very snobbish about people's riding. I thought it was really good to see. And it produced some absolutely brutal competition. Great to see some winners and some medalists up there who in particularly on the Saturday, who we've seen time and time again really produce the results and get a championship, get a medal up there. People like Alison Kinloch, who's been on the show, Alison getting a silver medal. Great to see that happen. Some of the youngsters coming through who I've been looking to commentate on, you know, doing under 8s and 10s racing, now are up there in the racing and taking positions. And that is just great to see.
Actually, what I've really liked about that course is even though there was a lot of sloggy mud and there was some, you know, there were running sections, actually a lot of the really deep mud was on downhill. And so actually, if you're skilled, and people who would watch it on the TV coverage would have seen how difficult it was on some of those downhill sections. But yeah, if that was totally flat, that would have been really awful. You know, all of those, you know, it would have been rather than, you know, I don't know how much of the course, you know, 25% of the course was running. I don't know, you know, it may have been less, may have been more. Felt like something like that. It would have been much more than that, because when you're going downhill, you can get on the bike and you can kind of let your momentum take you through it. And so I think that did make a really, really big difference. Yeah, the bit that was the surprise was there was the Lake District growing an extra lake during the weekend.
But then using that to effectively clean the bikes off.
I don't know.
Because that's what it was doing. It was turning sticky mud into slightly more liquid mud and giving it a chance to actually drop off. And you see that in some of the pictures. Well, but it depended, I guess, on which race you were in.
Well, that would have been the case if it wasn't right next to the pits. If it was around the other side of the course, it would have been a lot more convenient. But, you know, but yeah.
Okay, so it's all the bike wash. Yeah. I can do both on the way around.
but the racing itself, anyone that raced there, anyone that finished there, you know, respect, and people who dropped out. You know, a lot of the people, you know, there were people that dropped out of the racing on every day, like you'd expect. But you know, again, if you're cold and it's not going your way, sometimes that's a sensible thing to do. You know, and there are other riders that we, you know, for example, you know, the junior men's competition, we both tipped Ollie Akers for that. But yeah, he never looked like he was going to win it.
No, he had a really strong start though. First however many minutes of the race, he was going okay.
Yeah.
But then commiserations to Ollie. But he's had a great season, and I don't think his season's over.
No.
Yet.
No.
But
I hope not.
I mean,
but
no.
at the front of it though, we had Seb Grindley. It eventually settled down, so Seb took the lead. You know, it did move around a bit during that race. But you know, Seb taking that lead and then bringing it in ahead of Oliver Peace, and then Jacob Busch finishing in third.
I think it was very telling. Seb excels. If we'd recorded the show a little bit later in the week, we'd have changed our minds a little bit there, because Seb Grindley can run like there is no tomorrow. And I've seen him running. Ollie Peace, Jacob Busch have been two riders on form, and they're holding that form. I thought it was really, really indicative of the seasons they've had, because Ollie Peace and Jacob Busch both been fighting it out over the course of the back end of the season. So showing really good. So I think really interesting race there. Got to say, Mackenzie Malish did a great ride in fifth place there. on the way through. But it's really a who's who, people like Henderson, Fisher, Tabiner and co.
Am I right, Matt? Seb Grindley, is he a first-year junior?
I think he is. He's 17 rather than 18, isn't he?
So we'll get to see the jersey next season. But we're going to see it also in the junior women with Imogen Wolfe. It's the same situation with Imogen Wolfe. I mean, 2 minutes ahead. That's just phenomenal. Yeah, it was the start of a trend, I think. Imogen Wolfe, miles ahead of Elizabeth McKinnon and Florence. Let's come on to Flo and Emily Carrick Hansen in a minute. But yeah, it was... I think McKinnon, we'd both tipped Ollie Akers for the junior men, so no points. And you'd tipped McKinnon for the junior women, and she came in second. So yeah, at this point, Matt, is you've got 1-0 on me.
Marginally ahead.
Yeah,
marginally ahead. Before we move too far on the predictions, Imogen Wolfe, right? Absolutely got so much time for Imogen. Brilliant rider. She's part of that sort of, you know, the currently dominant team. And we saw it with like Paul Mullen's Bradford Olympic when the Thackerays were riding and we had that massive dominance in that squad there in the sort of the North Bradford side. This is South, basically Southwest Bradford, based Shibden CC. It's because it's based at the New White Centre. They are a massive force to be reckoned with. But Imogen has raced for years. And I've watched Imogen racing from under 14, under 16. She's out there. She's very, very smart at picking the line. But she's always smiling, always happy. And I, again, a rider who is 17. And that, for me, it says bundles about her power. Because she's not always at the in there for the win. She's been battling for the win. But... not an obvious name. So great to see her up there and great to see Lisserman in there in third place. I mean, I saw that picture on the podium. I was like, really? No way. Awesome. Oh, wow.
You missed the, it wasn't really shown on the TV coverage just how exciting it was. Maybe it was exciting for me because, you know, I know the Lissermans, they're Newark Castle riders. And that was her. I looked it up afterwards, actually. I think that's the first time that she has finished ahead of Carrick Anderson, Emily Carrick Anderson, ever. I think. I couldn't find any the other way around.
And I think it's also her first national podium across any discipline, if I remember rightly. Certainly that I've been at.
And that sprint for the finish, it was remarkable. It was because you've got Lisserman who has got, you know, you could see every cell of her body wanted it so much. And Carrick Anderson, who came in behind. So Lisserman came over the second hurdle just as Carrick Anderson was going over the first. And you could see that Lisserman was just, had no, you know, she didn't have any energy left, but it was somehow she managed to find some. And Carrick Anderson, you kind of thought that she was going to catch and going to catch. And then it didn't happen. And it was, yeah, it was amazing for Lisserman there. She had for Flo Lisserman. It was phenomenal. But her younger sister, Charlotte, won the under 14s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we, I know. You know, what a result for that public. Just brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, Newark Castle, a champs jersey and a podium. It was like, wow. Yeah. What a great. I bet that was a good drive home. Let's put it that way.
we sometimes say, don't we? Oh, you don't want to be in that car, team car going home with those guys. There's going to be an argument or, who's washing up. That would have been a great, I mean, that drive home will have been amazing and probably floated home above the tarmac on the way through. Great to see Libby Bell back on form up against Alice Colling and then Casey Iington finding it out, Daisy Taylor, McKibben, Whiteside. I mean, it reads as a who's who. Mm. I think in terms of people maybe we expected to be a little bit further up, you've got people like Niamh Murphy. Niamh maybe not on the form that that she's shown earlier in the season, and a little bit further down maybe. But the junior women's podium contenders, I think, runs to 25-26 riders.
Yeah, definitely.
That is how good they are all the way through there.
And no, we've not mentioned Kat Ferguson, who had not yet. She seems to be, just looking on the socials, I think nothing too serious there. But she kind of had a double crash, sort of crashed on one corner, and then, pretty much crashed on the next bit. So, it looked like, when I first saw it, I thought it looked like maybe she'd, dislocated a hip or something horrible like that on the first one. And then as she tried to ride after she'd ridden down a little bit further through the course, it really hit. But actually, I don't think that is what happened. That's what it looked like to me when I watched the coverage.
Kat is going to be 100%. She's a rider who is going to give it everything. She's in that sort of Tom Pidcock school, that they are going to either win or they're going to break something, bike, them, course, tape, somebody else, on the way through. That is Kat. That determination, that 100% commitment to doing it. But every now and then it goes wrong. And when it goes wrong big because of it. And you can't fault that commitment because that's what makes their character. But the trade-off is, you get more issues when you do go wrong. The consequences are bigger, and I think that is definitely the case. Heel fast.
Yeah.
I know the guys do so much for the sport. Tim Ferguson and the team up there, the Outdoor Centre, they've been hosting outdoor training camps and doing a lot of work with the riders, which is brilliant to see. And Kat, of course, I mean, we've got the track season coming up. We've got road season coming up. We know that she's multi-talented, multi-discipline.
Yeah.
And that makes a difference. So heel fast, rest up, there's going to be a lot more races.
Exactly. And I think it's the same for Emily Carrick-Anderson. For both of those two, who perhaps, they've had other days, and they'll have other days in the future. But this wasn't one. Total respect. The three at the front of that race, I thought all three of them gave us some really, really entertaining racing.
Yep.
Next race on the schedule was the Elite Women. Yeah, if you were watching it, you may have thought, well, who actually is racing in this race? Because you kind of got Zoe. She was pretty much a minute ahead by the end of the first lap. So Zoe Backstead. And then Annie Last finished in second, 3.5 minutes down. So Annie was my tip, and Ella McLean Howe, which was your tip, Matt.
Can't fault us for being close.
Finished in third. And then, let's do everyone that finished on the top lap. So you make yourself comfortable. Zankri's fourth, Christina Wycheck in fifth. That was the lead lap, five on the lead lap.
You could say in part that is the course, because it was producing big, big time gaps. You can also say that is in part because we had Zoe racing and clearly wanted it and absolutely overjoyed for Zoe. I mean, it is her first Elite Cross UK title, but that's no surprise given that she is 19 years old. This is somebody who is, I don't want to say the age gap between Zoe and Annie, but it's substantial. And it is a number of decades between them. Annie, I mean, I've got to feel sorry for Annie Last. I mean, she's had medals so many times. And yet, you're just thinking, when's she going to be up there? But she's been racing against Nikki Harris, up against, Helen Wyman. She's now come up against Zoe Baxter. She was like, what? Really? Come on, guys, give us a break. And you look at Ella McLean Howe, 19 as well. So two 19-year-olds on the podium against someone in their, I wasn't going to say this, but 30s. It's huge difference. They're amazingly talented.
In a change to what we've seen for most of the season, it was quite a long way down with Ishbel Strathdee finishing third in the under 23s. And she came over the line. Well, didn't come over the line. She was, because she wasn't on that lead lap, because it was only five on the lead lap. No, she was ninth in the overall standings. So it was such a bit of a change to most of the year. And then Ellen O'Day was the next rider in that category, down in 13th. So you've got the more mature riders were clearly able to cope with those conditions better than these, younger, lighter. Apart from Zoe and Ella.
KED in 7th.
Yeah.
You've got Kerry Styler in 12th.
Yeah.
You've got Isla Rowntree in 19th. There's so many great. Ruby James back on form. Ruby has having an amazing season. She's been racing on the continent. Clearly back on form. Good to see Sophie Thackeray back as well. Top 10 from her, a rider who was out with long COVID. So there was something nice about seeing a Thackeray back in a red and yellow, red and white jersey. It kind of made the old folk in me feel really quite happy. Good. I mean, but interesting that a lot of the youngsters had a hard time. Maddie Cooper, Lotta, Amy from the Montezumas, just a brutal, brutal course. And I think it really shook everybody and everything up. And I think there is a degree of lottery once it becomes so much of a running race, because you could see people losing time. If you slip and slide and you go backwards down one of those banks because you don't hit it quite right, you get your foot when you jump off in the wrong place, and that could have changed from the previous lap, you're down the bottom. You can lose 2, 3, 4 places in those early laps. And once you've done that in those early laps, Elia Jector S, the die's cast. It's game over.
What was noticeable related to that? I mean, to be honest, I don't think it would have changed the results on any of the races. But in the first lap, you came off the starts. You went up and over, round by the pylon, for people that have ever been there, round by the pylon, over the top of the hill. And you come down, and then you go down the muddy, deep mud S-bends down the hill. And effectively, the race split happens when the first person slips off on those muddy S-bends. Anyone ahead of that first person slip off is going to stay ahead. We saw that race after race after race. Possibly the only exception to that was the winner of the Elite Men, where they didn't have such a good start. But that was pretty much the only time where we saw someone actually come from a position through to be dominant.
You still have to have absolute power. And that's something for me that characterized the riders in the junior men's, junior women's, the elite women's and the elite men's. Absolute power, pure power really did show. Zoe Backstead has pure road, track, mountain bike, every kind of power you want. She's got it. It's there, and that showed. Annie's got so much off-road skill. That was getting her out of jail so many times. But it was pure riding power that took you through. And the sections where, say, Zoe Road, that first section, that downhill section, you still needed to have power to be able to do the traverses. And you need to be able to apply the power. So you can't be on the ragged edge, because that's when you make a mistake and you slip. You've got to be within your power zone comfortably, because that's when you're going to be able to get it down smoothly and react to the changes in the grip. And that just shows so much there. Yeah. It's one of those people are going to go, not sure that would have been the same result had Dave had baking hot sun for the whole week, the week before. But this is national champs and it's cyclocross. And, go watch a video of 1976 or wherever when they were throwing the bikes over fences.
This was part of our discussion that we actually had after the racing, in the pub on a Saturday night. It's like, go back through the years. National champs is always like this. It's in the middle of January. Go back year on year on year on year. And there, you've got all these times from Shrewsbury and, from Bradford. You go back, and even last year, the only one which wasn't in recent history was when it was at Cycler Park. And Cycler Park, I don't think you could flood it if you tried.
But I tell you something, it was Baltically cold instead. We had issues because of the frost and the ice instead. And I think it is cross. The national championships in Northern Hemisphere is the same time for everybody, and it is grim. Mm. It's grim weather. And there you go. There's your mud.
Well, and I would say to people on the day, there are lots of activities we could be doing in the winter. What other ones You know, what would be better than this, actually, when the weather's like this? It's not many.
I'm not going to comment on that.
So we definitely haven't covered the elite men's race yet. I mean, I thought Jensen Young had a good start, and I thought he showed a lot of wisdom at the start of that race, because he found himself in the lead, and it was like, right, this is it. This is my chance. I'm going to go for it. And he tried to get, it looked like he tried to get a gap at the start to get out as much lead as possible, probably knowing that he has some quality riders behind who would be able to chase back with their power. But who knows how much of a gap he could have got. So he did get that lead at the beginning, but he started to get pulled back in. He started to get pulled back in. Mason was a long way behind at that point, and it took a few laps for things to settle down.
You kind of got that almost that time trial mentality. When the race is that tough, you're almost racing yourself for a lot of it, particularly once you start to take riders out who are being lapped and 80%ed. And therefore, you know that you can eliminate a lot of the competition just by taking them out. I mean, come on, Nick Craig got lapped and eliminated. You know, James Swadling, Hubert Jones, Steve James is a green jersey winner of the national trophy overall. You know, he's a medalist. You got people like Charles Drake getting lapped, Callum McLeod. I mean, front row rider Bjorn Kort didn't even make the same lap.
Yeah, I was pleased to see. I thought there was something quite nice actually about Grant Ferguson, of course, former national champ, finishing on the lead lap. But it just goes to show. At the end we had Cam Mason taking the win well ahead. You know, he had it under control, well ahead of Blackmore, who I tipped, who was, again, had a big gap on Maine, who Matt tipped. but all three of those, well, and just ahead of Toby Barnes, actually, and Toby comes good at the end of a race. And yeah, he's kind of got that machine that never gave up. And so Thomas was, at the end of that race, was trying to stay in front of Toby, managed it. But I think if it had been another lap, they might have had a different story. But all three of those, I think, could come to the end of that race. Okay, Thomas Main would be disappointed, I'm sure. Well, first of all, he was in total stealth kit. I didn't recognise him at all. So, of course, he's never worn that kit on a cross bike before. the first lap, I have to confess, I thought, who's that home rider? I don't recognise. It took a few seconds.
Thomas, in his stealth kit. Yeah, Grant Ferguson, absolute class. I agree 100% there. Great to see him finishing on that same lap and showing just where he's good. And actually, I thought it was one of his best performances as well, because he's up against riders who are basically full-time and up-and-coming. People like Mason, Blackmore, Maine, you know, they're making a career out of this. And Grant hasn't. And I think that shows you just how, you know, absolutely class is permanent. That is without a doubt. But then you look at the riders up there. Joe Blackmore, good ride, battled, didn't quite have enough. You know, on another day, if Mason had not been in that field, you know, you could have seen him quite comfortably taking that win by a couple of minutes, I think.
Yeah.
Much as I hate to say it, because he wasn't necessarily my prediction, Thomas took it to him. He did everything he could. He was absolutely on it, and he tried to make the most of it. Cam, shocking start, didn't panic, and clearly recovered from his incidents previous weekend, but I'm not sure whether he did or not. But I tell you something, he wanted it. And the other thing that was really noticeable looking at it, having watched him through the years in real life, was watching his riding style and comparing that to Tom Pidcock's riding style. And if you took the two of them and we basically covered up the faces and the decals and put them in the same kit, sent them on the same course, you would be hard-pressed to tell the difference between them. I make a living out of knowing exactly what people look like on a bike.
Yeah.
And I think that the two of them would be very, very hard to tell apart, impossible.
Yeah. And there are some who, you know, should be good competition, shouldn't it? You know, there are some who are very obvious. So Nick Craig, Giles Drake, you know, who you can tell them from about a kilometer away. But some of the others are very, very difficult. So when I got back, I started to watch some of the other racing and actually found some of the Irish coverage. And I actually thought I'd managed that there was a mistake on it because it looked just like the GB coverage. So, because you've got the similar thing happening with Dean Harvey in the same kit, another Trinity rider, way off the front again, taking the win in the men's elite in Ireland. And then in the women competition, Maria Larkin again, a brilliant ride for Maria. But the person who I wanted to highlight for there is Hannah McClory. She races in the UK, raced for RFDA. She was second over the line and the first junior in the Irish champs. Yeah, and she podiumed in the elite in the elite Irish competition. Got first junior. So yeah, a jersey for Hannah. Someone that we'll have seen on the UK scene. Who lives in the UK, although Irish, and races in Ireland whenever she can.
3 minutes ahead of Anya Doherty. And Anya is a class act. You know, Anya is a really, really fast rider. We've seen her racing here on the mountain bike and on the cross as well. Anya, I mean, to put 3 minutes into Anya Doherty, that takes some doing. But Hannah McClory and the RFDA team, I think the similarities is really interesting. The RFDA team are a real development team. They really look after the riders and they give them opportunities. And I know they've been out racing everything from Portugal, Tour of Portugal on the road, supporting the riders off-road. And you look at them and you compare them to Cameron Mason's amazing ride, but backed up, it was so noticeable, his pit crew, and it was noticeable at the time, to Clanfield Cross and the international down that we were down at the weekend before, that his crew look after him. He is allowed to get on and race, supported by a great team around him. And that shows when you've got teams putting riders into the wind. Dean Harvey again. I think that's a really smart move, signing Dean Harvey by Trinity, because I think you've got a real class rider. I mean, people like, you know, ahead of Darren Rafferty, who is in third. I mean, he's a Hagens Bowman Axiom rider. He's no slouch, you know. And I think you just got to look at that and think, yeah, do you know what? I'm quite impressed by their smart team moves there to take today. And I thought that was a really, really nice tie-in actually between the UK and the Irish champs.
Another rider who was in stealth kit was Sana Kant.
Does she possess anything other than the Belgian national champs kit? What was she wearing? I mean, you know.
Yeah, it's the Creelan kit. Again, the coverage was really confusing because you've got Norbert Ribeirol and Kant, the first two riders. And it's so not used to seeing Kant in the Creelan kit. It's really easy to get confused by it. And it's just amazing. You know, you look at her record for the national champs. She has not finished outside the top step ever. It's just unbelievable.
Worthy.
You know, under 23 in 2009-10, and then you go from that year onwards, first. It is just a load of ones all the way. She has won every single one of them. It's remarkable. And yeah, I know that we enjoy it. We joke about it, but it's serious as well. You know, I love seeing it. She's got, this is what she's racing for. And it's not like she's racing against a load of Muppets. These are they're real races.
No, I mean, when you say 14 national Belgian women's elite titles, 3 world championship of women elites titles, you know, 5 super prestige wins at Zonhoven. You talk about 3 European championship wins, World Cup wins in Houston, Zolder, Coxide 7. You know, people say Marion Vos, greatest of all time. But you show me anyone who can equal that kind of record that Sana Kant has.
I kind of put her in the same category as Annie Last, really. No, they're a professional athlete. This is what they do for their job. They're at the top of their game, and they're a real inspiration. You know, that's what they do. They race, and that's what they do as a professional, and they do it remarkably well. In the men's race in Belgium, there was a really close race between Ventur and Hout and Sveik all the way through. Sveik was, I tip Sveik as I always do, and Matt tips Sveik as well. That last lap, Ventur and Hout just kept on. It was like just stretching the elastic again and again and again and again, and just taking a little bit about out of Sveik's legs. Lap after lap, and I think it was so close. It could have gone either way, but I think I don't know if you'd agree, Matt, but I thought tactically Ventur and Hout did a perfect final lap to beat Laurens Sveik.
Michael Ventur and Hout rarely makes a tactical mistake. When he gets let down, he generally gets let down just because he's physically not able to do it. Laurens Sveik, in comparison, is uber talented, very, very strong, incredibly fast in a sprint. But sometimes you just get the impression that he makes the wrong choice at the wrong moment or doesn't want to be dictated to. And what I found interesting is that the Belgian Championships, he was in second place. Very next day, he went out and rode at Ossegem and took the win. And in fact, so did the rider who was second in the women's championship, Marion Norbert-Riberal. She also won the women's race. And that says to me, there are two riders who are not happy with their result at the Nationals, which means that the World Cup and the World Championships coming up and the rest of the series coming up, you do need to watch out for them because they've clearly got enough in the tank that they can get second one day at a national championship and then go out and ride and win the day after. That's some going.
But that's not the whole story of Ottergem. That isn't the whole story by a long, long, long way. We've had it in the past thinking about Easerbeet and some of these other riders who have been getting a bit, where it's been getting a little bit elbowy. Ottergem was quite special. Choose your favourite rider, Ventur and Hout and Sveik, and then you can choose your position. Did Sveik push Ventur and Hout to force him to get into the pits? did Sveik do anything wrong? Did Ventur and Hout's pit crew do anything wrong by not having a bike ready for him when he got into the pits after Sveik forced him in? Or maybe Sveik was just racing the line and Ventur and Hout shouldn't have been trying to corner on the rail next to Sveik where it wasn't really a line. Take your choice, and you can argue about this, and I'm sure we will for a long time over the years to come, as the Belgian media has. And then a couple of laps later, you get Sveik coming into the pits doing a bike change, and Ventur and Hout's pit crew happened to be standing in his way just afterwards, and Sveik actually has to do a beautiful pirouette. He does a whole full 360 with his bike to get around the pit crew who are standing in the way, who happen to be Ventur and Hout's pit crew. So
funny
so
that, isn't it?
Beef it's, going on.
Yeah. And that, I mean, you can go back and listen to an earlier show, and they're all available to listen to back again. And you only need to go back to the start of the season, and there's Neil and I talking about the fact that at some point this is going to deteriorate. And I think this is the start of that deterioration properly. And it will be whether it's contained because of the media coverage and the exposure shows it up and it's starting to show the teams in a bad light and the teams put a clamp down on this, or it'll get worse. And if it gets worse, how much worse does it get than people getting in the way of each other and pushing each other about? And the answer is somebody gets injured, obviously, but we don't want that to happen. But I think you look at that and you think, well, that's going to continue onwards. It's going to rumble onwards. Creed and Freestats took the top two spots at Ottergem. Power Source and Big Go, 7th, 8th, 9th. When was the last time we said that about the Power Source and Bingo team?
Yeah.
And especially as they can't really complain about people operating team tactics against them, given the Vantura a bit ganging up on Speak earlier in the season. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like maybe it's just a case of karma coming around again, which, and it's just chosen that that team's person they're going to dump it all on is going to be Vantura. No, I don't know.
Well, very difficult. Maybe they were just feeling a little bit nervous because possibly they're not going to have another look in to get the national title ever again with Nace finishing third. when you've got Nace on the podium, who's how old is he? 12 or something? You know,
it just feels like it nearly getting old like me, mate. Right. That's for sure. Let's hit some. Come on, let's hit some other countries because there's some really interesting results.
Belgium. So we went from the deep mud of the UK to the deep mud of Belgium to the deep mud again of the Netherlands. I thought actually the conditions looked just like the UK, you know, coming into the pits, bikes to the shoulder. But the racing there was really interesting. I thought the Lars van der Haar and Nieuwenhuis race was much, much closer than I'd have ever thought it was going to be. And then with this matchy kit, you've got someone who's about nine foot tall and someone who's about 4 foot tall with Lars and Nieuwenhuis. And it looked like for some of the camera angles, you thought, God, Nieuwenhuis has got such a massive lead on Lars. And then you realize it's just because he's about twice the size of him. And Lars is kind of drafting while he's running, kind of just hiding behind.
It totally screws up the perspective, doesn't it? When it's away. And the reverse the other way around as well, when he gets scared. I mean, when you see a championship decided at 3 seconds in conditions like it was, that says everything about how close that race was.
I thought, though, that Lars, where he won the race, I thought it was really clever, actually. Where he got a little, they had a run up a bank, a short ride across the top, and then a drop down. And at the top of that, Lars remounted and put in three or four, 100% pedal strokes and to get himself down the drop in on the other side. And I think that gave him the gap that he took to the finish. And if he hadn't got the gap there, you know when you hear the commentators say anything can happen at the end of this race, I'm not going to call it until they come over the line, or they shouldn't be calling it until they come over the line. Well, anything almost did happen when Lars tripped with, 30 seconds to go, tripped over, and he had enough gap to recover and still take the win. That was a really, really close one.
Absolute cracker. Absolute cracker. And the women's race was a little less close, but I thought very, very interesting that we got Peters, Alvarado, Van Empel, and then the eternal fourth place, Denise Betsema, followed by Verstappen Brand. And for me, the big surprise there, I guess, is Brand coming in sixth place.
Before we talk about Brand in sixth place, if you remember the last show, and I tipped Alvarado, when you tipped Van Empel, your voice went up an octave, I'm sure, Matt, which went, Alvarado, really? I still stand by it. It was a good pick.
Beat my pick by one place.
It was still a good pick. But I think what's interesting here is you can see the riders who are there and the riders not there, and we're coming into the world champs, and you've got Alvarado beating Van Empel. You've got Lucinda Brand a long, long way down. You've got Voss.
Well, I'll be 10th place, 6 minutes, 49 down. That's either, I mean, it's either I'm going to win, but I'm not going to DNF because I don't DNF, but I'm going to just ride around, or it's a sign of what is a bad season. And that was really tough stuff. It shows the dominance of Dutch women's cross.
Yeah.
Scary.
Yeah. But then you've got other riders, in other countries who are calling it a day for the season. Prevost is now said, that's it. I'm not going to race anymore this season, which meant, I don't know that she would have taken it in France.
On current form, against two riders who I think are likely to be right up there for the future. Because when you look at Helene Clozel's result, she's really, really worked hard to get where she is and is staying there as well. And I just think that the whole way that this is running, she's going really strong. But you look at who's in second place, Lynn Berthier. Berthier, absolutely flying rider, absolutely class act, and again, amazing mountain biker. And that was quite telling in a lot of these that we've got a lot of crossover. Anne Tabor had the Dutch championships. Perrine Clozel, third place in there. And then you start running down a little bit further through. But could PFP challenged in there when you've got Clozel and Berthier basically coming through the finish in the same time?
And if you didn't have brilliant. One Clozel, you'd have had the other one.
Got spare in hand in France for that. I thought it was interesting that we got Venturini taking the men's. Given that Joshua and Lucas Dubau both rode, both are world-class mountain bikers. I mean, they are like podium-level mountain bike in the World Series, in the world scene. Both riders, third and fifth for Joshua and Lucas, respectively, they could have been, you know, you'd think that they would be right up there on a race where Berthier goes well. Close, but no cigar. Venturini, he took that from Dubé, but Dubé, of course, Total Energy rider, you know, using road power, basically, to stay with Venturini. Again, another road team rider who transfers so well to cross.
But then we got the mountain bikers who were dominant in a lot of the other races around Europe. I haven't seen any coverage of the Swiss race, but I really want to because Kevin Kuhn. Now, Kevin Kuhn has been challenging for podiums at World Cups. I was expecting to see him on the podium of a World Cup this year. It isn't the end of the season yet. Mm-hmm. But he finished in third. And you got Timon Reg and Lars Forster, two awesome mountain bikers. And then Keller winning in the women's elite. So
Don't go off the men's. Fifth place. Legendary name, absolutely legendary name, Frischnick.
Exactly. Yeah.
But Andre, and again, another rider who is on his way up, Andre Frischnick, but second at the national championships, you know, this is somebody who I wouldn't have put money on that. Not at all, because he just doesn't ride as much that we see, you know, the other riders riding. I think he's ridden two or three cross races at an international level. And got anywhere near those podiums, you know, just different rider, different skills, but a mountain biker all the same. But like you say, Keller, absolutely machine.
Yeah,
talk about machine riders. She is just so impressive. Speaking of mountain bikers in Italy, Filippo Fontana taking the men's elite. Silvia Persico, though, is the big name, really. And how long we talk about Sana Kant right up there, but when you talk about women taking repeated titles time and time again, you know, we go into that Italian championship and we talk about elite women and a rider who we have seen time and time again taking that and not taking it this time round. Who is it, Neil? Multiple time winner.
Well, Arzufi is probably the most recent.
So how about the rider who won in 9, 10, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20?
Yeah, Ava Lechner, she was 16th.
But you can't take away from Silvia Persico. And would you bet against her being in the medals at a world championship? Maybe, but not by a lot. She's a rider who can really pull it out on come the big day. Persico has a habit of doing it. Spanish championships, no surprises really, with Felipe Orts, Lucio Gonzalez taking the win there. No surprises for me. Felipe's been absolutely flying on a great season. Hungary again, no surprises with Vass there. You know, it seemed that a lot of the other countries, for me, it was business as usual. Michael Boris, you know, taking titles, Sasha Weber. on the way through Luxembourg. As we've predicted, Maria Schäuber taking the win. Good prediction there by, I think it was Neil's prediction, to be honest.
Yep.
But I thought it was good, really interesting. Then Denmark, Caroline Bowie.
Oh, yes.
Great ride by her.
Another mountain biker.
No surprises if you know what she's like on a mountain bike.
Yeah, yeah. While we're in the realm of mountain bikes, some of the other stuff that's been going on, Isla Short. Oh, man, that was a good tweet when I saw Isla Short as racing for Ghost. Next season, I thought, oh, man, that's probably my favourite women's team, and now I've got even more reason to.
Well, yeah. And their riders do cross over to cross, and I think that's a good mix for Isla. I think it's great to see her on a team. I hope she settles into that team. She's had some team choices which have not worked for her, and her solo seasons have worked. So I'm hoping she gets to be Isla, the Isla we absolutely know and love, to be absolutely astounding. I've commentated on her at a cross race up at Rjukan Glen at Cyclocross in Glasgow, racing against Kerry McPhee. You know, there's like these two, I mean, amazing riders, really lovely people. Isla's riding skills on that cross bike, just watch it. It's astounding. And I'm hoping that she settles in there and we then start to see her riding cross and mountain bike at the level which we know she can.
Yeah.
You know, that good. I'm hoping that's a good fit. Not all good news with teams, though, is it now?
Well, no, I mean, I think it's not good. It's not good news because we've heard that, well, Spectra, powered by Wiggle and Vetus, are not going to be Spectra powered by Wiggle and Vetus. What we have heard is that Spectra will continue, but there will be an announcement in the next week, next couple of weeks, is what I understand coming from that. So kind of watch this space.
The Spectra team have been a force. I think they've really, over the last 2 years, they came on the scene, they've hit it hard, and they have done their equality policy of men and women being the same level, number of riders, same input. Brilliant. Seeing them racing across disciplines, from the road to gravel to track to cross. Brilliant to see that as well, because bike riders are bike riders. And I just hope that actually this maybe can be turned into a really good thing. And I'm hoping that we're going to see them come back with a sponsor that then they can keep on working with. You know, they've done good things with Wiggle and Vetus, and they've both benefited from it on the way through. Come to an end, I think it'd be great to see them going forwards with a strong team. Whether it be the same format, who knows? I don't know. That'd be really interesting to see. It certainly means that we're going to see a whole load more different jerseys. Maybe we will see Isla in a ghost jersey in the up and coming races. Who knows?
Well, we've already done a bit of previewing. Let's look forward and let's enter the Laster Ronda. So coming up, we have the next round of the X2O. This is coming from Hammer. Currently, the standings for both the men and the women's competition are well within changing space. So Easebeat and Van der Haar, 1.5 minutes between them, with Easebeat in the lead, and Brand and Van Empel and Alvarado actually are all with pretty close to the top three in the women's. So it's 49 seconds from Brand to Van Empel and another about 20 seconds, 30 seconds back to Alvarado. So I think we could see people pretty committed if they're going to be going for the X2O series, especially some of those where, you know, if we take Brand, for example, I can't see her doing much else this year on her current form. But this is something where she's got the edge and she's got the motivation for it. So I think we could see some interesting racing, and we've certainly seen that in the past at the end of the season. But three rounds to go. Hammer is the next round, otherwise known as Playing in the Woods Cross.
Yeah, it is. That's you need to say no more. What I would say, go back, watch some of the previous editions. If you've got a little bit of time in between your cross coverage, which is abating somewhat, which means that we're spending a little bit less time staring at screens, honest. Yeah, go watch some of the past races at Hammer. Very interesting to see how that's changed over the years and how the race progresses on the way through. It means that when you would watch it this time around, it probably just gives you that little bit more information on the way through of how that race will play out. It is slightly different to to the other races because of the playing in the woods section, let's say.
Yeah, playing in the woods bit. Imagine you've got your cross bike, you're out for a ride, you go past some woods, and then next thing you know is that you've just been in that same little area for half an hour just mucking about and having an immense amount of fun. That's basically it.
You've been watching me out on the bike. Matt, where did you go? Went to the woods and didn't come back out for a bit. Yeah, that's the one. Yep. That would be it for sure.
No, not necessarily in chronological order with the hammer race. But then we have the World Cup, the cleverly placed World Cup in Benidorm. Right where everyone is doing their training camps. Matt, you're going to be on the mic for that. And what can you tell us?
Where should we start? So much information, believe me, in so little time. Stroke, you'll all turn off if I tell you everything. First of all, course. So Benidorm, everybody thinks the beach. Not touching the beach at all. We are not on the coast. We are slightly inland in Benidorm. In fact, we're up near the best way to say it is the scrublandy parks that are basically full of sand, but have intermingled in them gorse bushes and olive trees. And it basically, when we've talked about stitching together two parks before at races in Belgium, this is kind of what they've done here. You've got a very neatly manicured urban park with its children's play area, and they're going to be going through that. That includes the official sand section. I'm going to call it the official sandpit section, which is about 45 meter long straight through the sand. But you've got a lot of linking roads, a lot of linking paths, but the whole of this area is compacted sand. It's not built on top of mud or soil. It's compacted sand down. So this is going to be really weather dependent. Depends what it does. At the moment, we have seen over the winter some real big flash flooding in the area. And we've also seen some baking hot temperatures. And it's going to depend what it does over this next week, because we go from that first very neatly manicured area into what is almost an urban woodland. And by woodland, it's essentially scrubby olive trees. If you've ever been down into the sort of the south of Spain, you've seen the edges of the sort of the motorway verges as you've gone past. It's that kind of terrain, and it means it's relatively flat. It's going to be incredibly quick, and tire choice is going to be really, really difficult. Add into the fact that we then have some of the best in the world coming down to race. It really is a who's who. The official entry list is quite scary across all of the categories. Now, not so many UK riders riding, but down to ride is Dean Harvey, who we've mentioned earlier on in the men's under 23. So going to be interesting to see him in action and clearly on form. But when we go to the elite races, you ready for this? This is quite some race field. If they all turn up, Voss, Bakker, Brand, Peters, Van Alphen, Van Amroy, Van der Heijden, Van Empel, Wurst, Berkier, Clozels, pair of them. Should we keep on going? Honsinger, Out and Racing, McGill Racing, Rochette Racing, Persico, Lechner. Now, Riverol, Frank, Verdonshot, plus Zoe Backstead, Marie Schreiber. That is a who's who. That is scary, scary who's who. Now, is this because it's well placed in this calendar? I don't know. The women's race should be an absolute cracker. And it's not like anybody has got much of an inkling how this is going to ride, because this has not been used. It's not a regular on the circuit. I'm really looking forward to seeing how that massive field play out. In the men's race, number one, big three are back. Thomas confirmed he is due to ride this, and he is going to ride this. And he was a big, is he going to ride, is he not? But I thought his season was going to be over.
I was convinced it was over. I thought that was it.
But Tommy's down on that start list, and I've seen some social media floating around that he's going to go there. He's going to be there and racing. Whether or not it's the case, we'll see. I would love to see him in action on this course, because I think with the amount of twists and turns on this, it's going to suit him, and it's not tractor pull mud. Think of him on the course at Fayetteville.
Yep.
Because Fayetteville in the dry is much like this.
That's exactly
in terms
what
of
I was
going
to ask
run.
You, actually. It looks to me, by looking at the map of the course and the terrain, that it's going to be Fayetteville-esque as a course. And we
dusty,
saw
fast,
what,
not yeah. mud plugging. Yeah, yeah. And take away the big three. In terms of GB riders, Toma, due to ride from Hope, so Thomas Mean. But you've got in there the regulars at the top, Jens Adams on Flying Season, Ellie is a bit down to ride. We'll see if that happens, given his priorities elsewhere. Lawrence Feek, Tim van der Bosch.
Van Turenout
is also due to ride.
Yep.
So and the Speak Van Turenout battle could continue.
Okay, that's the thing to look out for, really. Isn't it?
Who's it's got the sharpest of, elbows?
Yeah, you've got the battle of the big three at the front, and then you've got the...
Joris Nieuwenhuis versus Lars van der Haar. They're both riding as well.
And is Mason on the list?
No Cameron Mason on the list, which I think is a bit of a shame because I think given the way he's riding at the moment, that may be a bit of a mistake by that Trinity team, but he's got a program he's going to follow. I think really interesting to see will be Matthew van der Poel. You know, he's talked about, we talked about it in the last show, go back and have a listen. The post-race interview with Matthew and his absolute devastation at his back causing him problems can be really interesting. See, Tim Unreg racing again, another national champion, but you've got Orts in there, you've got Fernando Suarez in there, Boris riding, Stevie's back once again, Weber's riding, who's who of people who've taken national titles, and you think who's missing? If they turn up, this is an entry list, that is going to be another cracking race and something more akin almost to, I think, a lot of the crit race and crit style racing that we see early season on dry courses. But this is the penultimate round. So there's big points and it could well change the outcome of where it goes. So going to be really interesting. And of course, those riders who are training on a training block, how fresh are they going to be coming in there? So there's so many questions. Really looking forward to that.
And then the final round of the World Cup this year is coming from Besançon in France. Course, which is either going up or going down pretty much all the time. The big questions from previous years is what will the flower arrangements be on the flower pots that were across the top? And will we get the train going backwards and forwards in the background again?
Yeah. Please, let's have the train watching in the background.
But I know it's easy to, obviously, we're trivializing it, but it's kind of nice. I like it when they have this character from place to place. It's produced good racing in the past. It's got the do you ride or run sections, and that can make the decision over the whole result at the end. It's been good racing there in the past. The standings are still fairly close. You've got Muhammad Ali, sorry, Lawrence Feek and Michael van Turenout, first and second in the men's competition. Feek could wrap it up in Benidorm if things go in a way that I don't expect them to, because he's what 20 odd points ahead, but bear in mind you get 40 for a win, 30 second, 25 for third. Realistically, if they're further down the standings, the gaps get much, much smaller. So probably we will be waiting for Besançon before we actually get to the decider. And then in the women's standings, we have Van Empel pretty much has nailed it ahead of Peters, but not necessarily. It's going to be one of the two of them who's going to take the World Cup this year. Van Empel will probably bring it home.
Should. And what did we say earlier on? Cyclocross isn't over until it's over and it hits the line. And I think you've got to remember on this that, for me, the way this has developed with the stateside early races, going through a real variety of races, some of which have been muddier than normal, some of which have been a bit more tricky. We've gone into Zonhoven for the World Cup with that big sand. We then go into a real unknown for the penultimate round. To go to Besançon for the last round, you've got to be good at everything. And I think, it, you know, a good cross rider will excel on that course at Besançon. And that for me is a perfect way to wrap up a World Cup series and to give you a racing that's going to come right down to the end, because it means no one rider can dominate right the way to the end of the season. And, you know, Van Empel's come close to dominating, but she's not done it. She's not dominated. And with Sheeran Van Amroy on form, and of course, you've got all these people trying to peak for the World Championship, which comes after the week after Besançon. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I think so. And with that, I think I can see the finish ahead. Thanks, everyone, for listening through the season. There's still lots more crosses to come. And thanks, everyone, for the coffees. We have our account at buymeacoffee.com/crosscast, where you can buy us a virtual coffee and we can convert that into our hosting fees that we have to pay every month through the year. So thanks to everyone. You know, so many people have supported us through that, and that's been absolutely fantastic. And so we really, really appreciate that we do it through this crowdfunding source rather than through through advertising, which would be the alternative on that.
I'll reinforce that. I am an absolute podcast addict. I guarantee I'll listen to at least two or three every single day during the day. I tell you something, you don't want them with adverts in. Whatever you do, get onto the site, because adverts on the web, no matter how nicely done they are, guys. Oh, no, yeah. Don't do it. Don't go there. Please, please don't make us go there.
And so we are going to be, depending on where you're listening from, you may hear Matt on the feeds. My season's over. And so I'm not racing anymore this season, but you can find us online. Matt, where can we find you?
You find me on social media on @MattFixerPain, as well as on everything from Strava to Zwift to MyWoosh. You can catch up with me on the weekends as well on Esports from MyWoosh, which is basically esports cycling. You can also catch up with me on the Donny Chain Gang and the WOW DCG. That's Tuesdays, Thursdays and Wednesdays. You may even see Neil back out if he decides to actually come and ride in his week off after post-racing. He's an addict, really. Don't tell anybody, but he'll be there. I'll almost guarantee it. Neil, where apart from the Donny Chain Gang can we find you?
Well, you can find me online at Crosscast Neil in most places. I won't be on the Donny Chain Gang for the next 2 weeks, so I'm having a proper couple of weeks off the bike before I start thinking of the mountain bike season and other things that will be coming up in the future. But you can also find me on the Gritty website, so gritty.co.uk, and we've got other stock coming in all the time, those zip-offs that so many people are asking us for. We've got another shipment of those due before the end of this month, so do keep an eye on that if you've been asking me all about those at the national champs. So until next time then, we'll see you on the other side of the table. Bye.